I'm Robin Weigert, and I'm here with...
Brad Dourif.
And I play Calamity Jane, and Brad...
plays Doc Cochran.
And we're narrating this episode for you, or talking about some thoughts that we have as it goes along.
It seemed like actually a year from the time that we shot to when we finally saw this. And I can't tell you how exciting it was the first time I saw these beginning credits. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, Davis Guggenheim just went out with a camera one day and shot all these just on an inspiration. And it's a beautiful opening sequence, I think.
It also shows, I think, David Milch's love of horses.
Yeah. David has a bunch of race horses that he owns and periodically lays down a lot of money on.
He always wins.
Or plays until he does anyway.
This episode was this huge transition from everything before this kind of led up to the killing of Wild Bill Hickok. Keith's performance for me was one of the highlights of the season. I just couldn't believe, I thought he was Wild Bill Hickok.
Absolutely. He was incredible.
And so suddenly, here we were, no more Keith, and we were all on our own and having to make this series work.
And we were
somehow.
All in mourning, I think, too. Or at least I know I was, both as my character and as myself. I couldn't believe he was gone. What I love about this episode as it develops is that in Bill's absence, it falls on everybody else to fill the void, and you see this kind of groundswell of love from all these individuals who you'd never expected of. You'd never expect Trixie to come through for Alma. You'd never expect Bullock to be such a stand-up guy. You'd never expect Jane to suddenly start taking care of a sick guy in the woods when she herself is in mourning. Everybody just, sides of their nature come through that you can't believe.
And the town, I think up until this point, we kind of are being introduced to the town. This is the first time that the town sort of acts as one, does a town thing. You know, we hold a trial.
Officers of the court, in the box on my left. I have no say in either outcome, so please don't try to bribe me.
The newspaper fella seems a good sort.
He's all right. How
far into the process? This is the time at the beginning on Swearingen's balcony where he checks everybody out, but he's up there with Powers this time. And it's one of my favorite things about the show, watching Ian put together what's going to happen and the way they introduce the show.
What's become of the woman who was Mr.
There's lots of people observing people out of windows or from balconies.
Over his murder.
Yes, well, there's a child to be considered.
And she couldn't be doing better.
You know, my voice is very different from the way I normally talk. I chose that up front. And the reason I chose it was because it sounds so unscientific that I thought it would contrast this guy's, because this guy really is a scientist. He's somebody who... gets in trouble for, he's there because he's constantly getting busted for digging up dead bodies to do science on. I wanted to do something that was unintellectual, and he's very damaged from the Civil War. There's something about a gruff voice that feels damaged to me, and it just felt right. So yeah, it was something I just kind of chose externally and worked with for the character. And it works for me. It just somehow puts me in a different frame of mind and helps me get into character just having to do that different way of talking.
25 cents! 25 cents a tuck!
These are good boots you people sold me.
Glad you're satisfied.
Hair from a heathen dead less than one day!
This is the beginning of an interesting arc for Bullock. He cannot bear to see people exploited or misused, and it manifests as anger, but then it's part of what in his nature forces him to do the right thing.
I'm not making a penny from this, Mr. Bullock.
I guess we're all people who are unlikely to be and do the things that we do. And I know David has talked about how this series is about how do we eventually civilize ourselves and why, and It's always for unlikely reasons, I think, for very human reasons, for greed and the wrong reasons we do the right things, and we do them in spite of ourselves.
Yeah, I don't know. Didn't some Mexican bring the head in for bounty?
I really look forward to David Milch coming in and explaining the scene. And even though, you know, the way he talks about stuff isn't exactly how an acting coach or normal acting ways of talking about scene, like it differs from that, it's always inspiring and it's oddly to the point. I mean, there's always something that I can grab from it and really use. And it always astounds me that I'm able to do it. He's just so different from anybody I've ever worked with.
It's got its disadvantages.
We're illegal.
This idea here, I'll let it run for a second.
The United fucking States. We start holding trials. What's to keep the United States fucking Congress from saying, oh, excuse us, we didn't realize you were a fucking sovereign community and nation out there. Where's your cocksucker's flag? Where's your fucking navy or the like? Maybe when we make a treaty with the Sioux, we should treat you people like renegade fucking Indians, deny your fucking golden property claims, and hand everything over instead to our near-to-well cousins and brothers-in-law.
That we don't want.
Now, I thought that was an incredible idea to introduce that as a thought.
Yeah, it's a complicated one, and it's totally viable explanation for why McCall was let go, which is otherwise so inexplicable. Because they didn't want to take the law into their hands when they weren't a sovereign state and call attention to themselves.
And suddenly Swearingen is more dangerous because he has a big picture kind of view of the world.
Oh, he's a complicated thinker. He's a deep thinker. He has the most fantastic kind of paranoia.
Mr. Bullock.
Doc, I just seen Miss Garrett.
I've got a proxy for her to sign.
You ought to go ahead and get that done so she can go ahead and leave camp.
Anything else on your schedule I'm behind on?
No, sir.
Boy, you
backed
just,
me down.
You just can't get a break this episode. I didn't realize how many people
nicely everybody
box you around. Yeah.
And counsel for the defense.
After that part's over. And not prejudging the evidence. Why don't we try the cocksucker in my place?
Second. Officers out of the court. Magistrate.
There's a cripple who'd do if I could pry her from Mr. Swearingen.
This character that Sanderson does is one of my favorite characters, just simply because he seems just like a Dickens character. He's so weak and smart at the same time and dangerous and cowardly and completely amoral.
Thank you, Mr. Bonham.
Yeah, I remember each character seems like they come from a certain genre to a degree, and I remember having a scene with Molly where David was just delighted by the contrast and was saying that it's as if a Henry James character met a Mark Twain character and the two of them had to have a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's Dickens to me. He's totally straight out of Dickens.
It's true. You don't want him running your boy's school, you know.
Several days ago, I watched you and while Bill Hickok support each other in a gunfight from the window in my room. Later when Mr. Hickok...
One of the things that gets me, I guess you don't have a corset, Robin.
Not yet,
but I just don't see how these poor women...
Well, it was 110 degrees the other day and Molly had to act in that thing and I just couldn't believe it. All day long, 110 in the desert.
Mr. Bullock has...
But the leather's hot too, though.
You're always talking about these Victorian women passing out, you know, and how faint they all were. The whole thing was just because of the corsets.
Yeah.
It was just whalebone.
Feminine frailty we owe to the corset, I think.
Well, I think, and also it was still hot during this time when we were shooting this, I remember.
Well, something we just passed over was a first sort of little contract between Bullock and Alma. It's their first meeting where she has to sort of, by sleight of hand, as she always does, indicate that maybe she took an interest in him.
Is he dead or alive?
He's sick.
We ain't no hospital.
Number 8's relocating. Bundle him up. Put some of Leon's remedy down him and take him to the hills.
Powers is such a nice guy in this. God.
I know. It's funny, you know, the difference in kinds of evil. he and the swear engine, it's in relief against Tolliver that you start to realize that swear engine's kind of a good guy.
Yeah,
you know?
He could be worse.
he could be worse.
He could be like Tolliver.
Chances will improve outdoors, the bracing air.
But boy, Powers does him great.
Yeah.
What are you moving the tables for?
You said you wanted the jury right here.
Can't they sit at separate tables?
Do you want the tables together or not?
I don't want anything done that can be undone 5 minutes after this fiasco concludes.
Earl gets me because he's always so believable in every single thing he does.
I absolutely agree with you. I keep wanting more and more from him, you know. I just want more and more material for him because he fascinates me.
Yeah, he fascinates me too. And every single thing I've seen him in outside of this, it's the same way. Everything is very, very real and believable.
Very easy, easy in the shoes of his character, yeah. Effortless.
She don't let Hickok bring the hardware cocksucker into it.
She's trying to get off the dope. Maybe loaded, she'd get her self-confidence back.
Oh, let me camp beneath her window and suggest it.
Hickok's half-woman friends off somewhere's on a tear.
Yeah, that'd be me. The half-woman.
She's asked me to find her some help. I suggested the gimp.
No.
So as not to put a whore up first off. Now I will propose Trixie.
Being historically accurate helps in terms, for me, in terms of what I'm physically doing. My character is based on a couple of different characters. One of them is a scientist, a very, very famous doctor, Burton Hare, who, you know, the famous body robbers worked for. This guy did more autopsies than any other living human being and really started several branches of science. It's based on him, and then there's another character who fought in the Civil War, was a doctor, a surgeon in the Civil War, and had terrible post-traumatic stress disorder and was unable to function for years afterwards. And these two characters were the historical characters on which my character was based. But my character has nothing to do with Deadwood, actually.
Wishes not to participate further. Now, I need guidance in certain matters, but I don't know who stands for him.
What are you trying to find out?
This guy.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, he starts out in the season, and he has, I think, the funniest. My biggest laugh was when he says, "I know from experience," when he's talking about friends. I just fell on the floor.
And that
same. So wacky and funny and weird about it.
Yeah. And that's, I was going to say, that same idea breaks your heart later on.
Oh, God.
That he can't hold on to the idea of any familiarity, and he comes to these two, and they're strangers to him all of a sudden. It just gives
He thinks they're from the devil. And I thought that was the most poetic scene when he goes into the thinking that the hardware guys are the devil.
Yeah, it just completely broke my heart to watch that.
Are we open for business?
And the minister's speech in this, his sermon, is the heart, not just of the episode, but in a way of the whole series. The idea that everybody has their part to play. Everybody's part of the body. And whether they know it or not, they matter to the whole body, you know.
Ah, this is where we all will end one day.
Yeah, in the mouth of a pig.
I'm actually going to be different. I'm going to have myself cremated and put into my next door neighbor's vegetable garden. That's really
that's
what
good.
I want to have done with myself.
You're going to help plants grow. That's good.
This guy is great. This guy is great. great, great.
And can I proudly say he went to my alma mater. He went
he
to
did. Well,
NYU.
Genius springs from fertile soil.
Oh,
that's
no.
all I can say.
He's actually unbelievably handsome in real life, too. He's kind of an Adonis, and this is a masterpiece of makeup and whatever
and
he's
acting.
Doing to distort his face and acting and everything else.
On this man's counsel.
The scene before he kills, where he's with the Chinaman, he was just so despicable, where he does the eye thing and acts like a cat.
I love that little
scene. And
he's scene.
Spitting all the food out. Everything he does, just, you know, when Wild Bill turns his head, those faces he makes at him, everything. Just, you hate him so much.
And no mistake, everyone in there saw me shoot him. If you'll let me set our strategy...
And this gentleman, I think this may be one of his first times acting, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I have that wrong.
I didn't know that.
He's terrific.
Did Butler Hickok ever kill a relative of yours?
You know, there's all these wonderful characters floating around in the form of these cowboys that we have on set, and every so often David just can't resist the temptation to stick them in there in one role or another.
And they're great.
And they're fantastic.
They're great. These guys are
all... this is the life they live. This is the world they come from. And somehow, even though we're living today, they have preserved some essence of this in their lives.
Brother in Abilene.
Despicable act.
Yeah, this is really, really cold. Oh my God! It looks like a piece of like a living meat.
Yeah.
Wrapped up like that. What an image.
You all right?
It is a piece of living meat. Look at it.
Look, I'm sorry as hell about all this. Sorry as hell.
See those little sores that they put on him with the makeup? He was lying in the sun all day with those things on to shoot this, and some scenes we did later. And at the end of the day, when they took him off, he had those same marks there because he'd gotten a sunburn.
Yep.
And so he looked like he had the plague for quite a while after that.
Oh, Christ. Oh, God, take me.
What do you look at out there?
I love her.
Yeah, me too. Gosh. I love watching Trixie watching and reacting to things.
She's great at getting the sense of the scene and great. Every time I see her, I feel like the story gets moved forward in a way. She's just got this remarkable sense of that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And a presence. She's very present.
Yeah. You know what's going on. You can see it in her.
Yeah, my favorite moment in the whole series, I think, is that in episode 12 when she just turns and looks at Swearengen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
All the stuff that goes through her face.
A million things in one silent moment. It's so beautiful.
It is. This is, again, the beginning of new things. We're starting, the whole episode's starting to change direction and shift toward the town becoming a town. And one of the things that makes this town is smallpox.
I love this scene for you, Brad. I know it's a small one, but I love it. I love you standing up to power.
I'm not very good at it in real life.
Maybe that's why it's so fun to watch you do it in character.
If you want to remedy the epidemic that you have no reason to believe will break out, I would send somebody there right away.
Heard you loud and clear, Doctor.
It's also great dialogue, this scene.
Yeah.
If I do, you'll be the first to know.
Here you go.
There you go. Don't take that from him.
That will be known to every damn person in this camp.
Yeah, it's just a really, really, really well structured.
Oh, and here's my boy.
Yep.
This kid had two things to do maybe, two, three things to do, and he invested so deeply in it. And he, too, is someone who I think had just maybe acted once before or something. He works in a, I think he works in a funeral home. He has a death scene later, and he would weep before each take so that when he was dead and in repose, I would know what the moment prior to his death had been like for him, so that I'd have something to play off of.
What a Mitch. What a great guy. Jeez, that's great.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was doing that.
He was doing that, yeah.
God, that's great.
Yes, sir.
Come here. Get this out of here.
This is... What an idea. I mean, David's got the greatest sense of humor.
That's the first head. Some chili chompers out there somewhere right now selling my 50. You get rid of that head. You'd better know of another place with a position open for an idiot.
Well, I got a couple of places I can keep it, I guess.
Until after the trial.
Well, what do you do with it then? Put it somewhere in the bar?
Yeah, I happen to love this actor, too. Please. This is going to turn into just a love fest. I have to stop.
Yeah.
And if it's handled the right way.
This is one of the best speeches of the season. This was, like, so nailed.
There's gold on the woman's claim.
You know, it's funny, there's a last line in the scene that Bill just improvised. And he says, motherfucker, and that is the one word that's a cuss word in this thing that actually isn't period. But it was just so organic the moment that they kept it in. But it's the one improvised line in this thing, and it happens at the very end of the scene.
To explain why I want her bought out, I'll make a pretext of my fear of the Pinkertons. I'll throw Farnham a token fee. Why should I reward E.B. with some small fractional participation in the claim? Or let him even lay by a little security and source of continuing income for his declining years.
he even does the oh poor me thing with the palm out on his forehead.
But somehow it comes absolutely out of him.
Regularity is a forlorn fucking hope.
Regularity is a forlorn.
Hey, that's you're doing your Chucky laugh. You're creeping me out a little here.
Sorry.
So every fucking free moment of his life, E.B. has to spend scrubbing the bloodstains off the goddamn floor. To keep from having to lower his rates. God damn that motherfucker.
And that's the one.
That's the motherfucker.
Yep. And you'll have all kinds of anal historians going nuts over that word, and it's just, you know.
The prosecution will open, the defense will respond, the jury will be charged.
This is historically accurate.
Go ahead.
Things are picked that really happened, but the reasons are fictional. This way of doing it, I mean, it shows you it's fiction, but at the same time you get a sense of how things actually take place in history. They just happen. They happen out of the blue for reasons that people can't explain, that, you know, that's just something in their character that they didn't even know about, that everybody else would think would unlikely, and suddenly the course of history has changed somehow.
Right.
Now, the killer had no reputation. But the circumstances speak badly enough about his character that in time to come, he may get one. Now, we all know that even though the killer is a coward, not all killings are murders. You jurors have to decide if this killing was. And your decision will come to this. Either a man giving you a dollar for breakfast is provocation beyond endurance. Or Jack McCall...
God only knows, I never will forget the first time that I saw you do the scene in my cabin after Swearingen comes in and scares you and you're unable to do anything about it. and you're so ashamed, and then it goes back to what happened to you when you were a child. And I just remember it was really, really just almost hard to be in the same room with you. There was so much.
No, we did that scene and did that scene and did
that. And it was hard after eventually. It was very hot in there, and I was wearing a three-piece suit, so in fact it was hard.
It was hard to be in that room for real
with you or anyone.
Oh God, you're a great scene partner. We were scene partners a whole lot, and
I really
was
felt
so
like,
lucky.
I really felt like, you know, and the coach was David, and he would come in. And
no, it felt like being in acting school, didn't it, sometimes,
yeah.
You know, like,
and
here's your scene partner.
Trying to make the stuff work was, you know, was like we deconstructed, just like in class, you
yeah.
know?
I was so amazed that you could have that experience on a television show, you know?
As you're shooting.
that you could give it that kind of earnest effort and really try to make it work, you know. I had never imagined. I had such a false idea, I think, maybe, of what things were like on this coast, you know, being the New York snob that I am.
Well, I've only done one series. I've never, you know, so I'm not a real series regular guy, but that other series was completely different than
this
one.
I'm sure this is rare.
So this one is, I think, much more of an act of discovery.
Yeah, they let you discover, and I mean,
as we shoot, that's, you know, a hands-on act of discovery, because David can come in and completely, as you know, rewrite the scene, and it ain't the scene we started out with at all, and it's better, you know, and we're happier, but, you know, we better run, and now what do
yeah.
I say here?
And then every
say?
So often you have no clue about what you're doing, you know. And David will come in and say, well, you know, at the dawn of man, this and that happened, and that's, you know, you're supposed to try to understand the scene off of that. And then somehow you do. Somehow he drops enough nuggets in there that you get it, strangely,
yeah.
from this wild philosophical treatise on the nature of love and humanity. You know, you'll figure out how you're supposed to play a scene.
It actually does have something to do with the scene. It's not,
yeah.
But it ain't language that you were taught to say to an actor before, or normal acting language at all. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And inspiring sometimes.
Yeah, it can be really inspiring. It's true.
I was of the impression you were hurt. Ma'am? Mr. Farnham said you had some sort of physical liability.
I'm not her. Oh, she's lovely, though, Jewel. May I wash her? Give her a nice bath?
Of course.
All right, little one.
There's something beautiful in this scene that's going on right now, which is watching these two damaged women learn from each other, you know, and find a loving... I see Alma studying her, saying, how do I be loving with this child?
You want a blowjob?
What women can create together in this very male-dominated world is kind of amazing.
I also think that that was a delicate scene. This is not.
Yes, that is true.
And, you know, it leads in with, do you want a blowjob while we're talking?
Yeah, I know.
Which is just such a juxtaposition, and that's one of the things that just drives me crazy. I think it's so cool the way they, the way
it goes
this
back
thing's
and forth.
Arranged,
yeah,
the way they juxtaposition the scenes,
yeah. And in some ways, Swearingen, you know, shows his underbelly with remarks like that, because he's not of a certain class, you know. Someone of a certain class, Tolliver, would never make a remark like that as an opener, and it shows his background a little bit. You know?
And it makes him a great character, because if there's an elephant, if there's ever something that, you know, we're not supposed to talk about it, Al's going to bring that up first.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. He's gonna address it. And God bless him for it sometimes,
yeah.
You know, just saying the obvious.
It was horrible. How could we fucking avoid it? How could we let the vipers in the big nest know that we didn't want to cause any fucking trouble?
And that's when you had your second vision.
Yeah, the cutthroats and the pigs, but who wants all that blood spilled, Judge, huh? Isn't there a simpler way of not pissing off the big vipers?
I think, you know,
so
I think...
So reasonable.
I think Ian McShane got this monologue, got this chunk of dialogue anyway. I think he got it. It was one of those night before things. And it's unbelievably long and complicated with the vipers dancing and everything else going on. And
he just
has one of those minds. I'm so jealous.
Yeah, me too.
He can just memorize in the blink of an eye.
How do you suppose the trial's going?
I think Tim's Bullock starts to get more complicated here. The arc of his character seems simpler at first, and little by little he gets more and more complex in the stuff that's going on with him.
Yeah.
Good talk?
We'll see.
You see that one?
I did do a lot of general reading about Deadwood just to get a feeling for, I mean, you know, because you're in a mining town, you want to know what a miner did, because you would know what a miner did. You would know all the different phases of how they mined gold, just because that was what people talked about.
We're back in session.
I wanted to know about the historical ideas of the character, who Wild Bill Hickok was, because we would know that. And just get any kind of feeling, just kind of a something, you know, because you never know what it is that will turn you on. You just, it can come from anywhere. So you try to saturate yourself with as much historical information as you can, and that's kind of, so I read everything I could get my hands on in terms of Deadwood itself.
Custom dictates that you excuse him. The jury will now retire to the whore's rooms and begin their deliberations.
The effect on the community, too, of justice not being served.
Yep. Is a huge and important idea that's brought up. What just happened there is done so clearly and well. The whole episode changes at this point.
Open the bar. Get the girls fucking. The jury comes back.
Downstairs room is occupied.
Upstairs, ain't?
True.
In a way, because of the institutional failure, it allows for individuals to take it upon themselves to do the right thing. It's so interesting. It's like the larger system didn't work.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Here she comes.
Jeez, I hurt so much now.
Certainly, I'm talking very differently as a character, but I remember getting a script to audition with for the pilot and playing around with it in my room and having this character come out this way. And so, and I don't know that there was much that was very conscious governing this choice or anything. I sort of played around until I found a way for the words to feel right when they were said out loud, you know. In some ways, it reminds me of when you're in acting school and you're doing mask work or any other thing. I guess I have to explain that. If you have a mask on, that gives you a character in a class. You know, you play around in your body until suddenly you see in the mirror that you're inhabiting the body that fits the mask. And then it just feels right and it locks in. And for me, it was a little that way with this voice. And I built off of it with physical behavior. I built off of it some after having come to know the cowboys on set, because I felt like they were the right template for her. You know, the way they walk, the wide gait, the sort of posturing they have. These are guys who are such sweethearts when you get down to it, but they have so much bluster, and they're always making these off-color jokes, and they're just pushing it as far as they can, you know. And I thought, this is exactly what she is like, and somehow in female version, this is what she's imitated, you know. So a little bit of the physicality I built in off of them, but a lot of it was just sort of like clicked in really before I had a chance to think through anything, I guess.
I remember you used to comment on how Calamity Jane was, you thought of her as this tough person full of herself, and constantly all you were doing was breaking apart, you know, and crying all the time.
Yeah, you know, I think I came into this whole thing thinking that I was going to be playing this badass, you know, and that I was going to get to gallop around a whole lot and crack bull whips and be, you know, just almost like a superhero girl, you know? And I don't know why I imagined that, because, of course, Milch would never let that happen.
Yes.
The first few times I was asked to sort of crack in half, I remember sort of thinking, well, how am I going to put that back together and, you know, into the image of the character that I want to be out there and all that stuff? And, in fact, she's you know, there's a lot about her that's like a, you know,
fragile.
Fragile, so fragile. And of course, that's why I was cast in the darn role, you know. I thought I'd managed to pull the wool over everybody's eyes enough to have them believe that I was actually really tough and strong. And anyway. I keep thinking as we're talking that we're trampling over these
I know.
Scenes that are happening. Like, I love that little one that just passed by where Trixie's had the idea of putting a little girl in this camisole. And Alma's kicking herself. Why didn't she think of it? You know, and the way they're sort of just learning off each other.
What did you send him to get?
I haven't said yet, Eddie. You think Askin's going to make me? Look at the lady.
It's quiet. I thought I'd see Hickok buried.
Sure.
Oh, and there, too, another person doing the right thing.
Sure,
you know?
Tony, go ahead.
In spite of opposition.
But what's your point? You weren't asking permission. Conscience struck. Needs to sing a hymn.
She liked Andy.
I did too.
It's hard on these men, you know, who just think they've...
They have to control everything.
Yeah.
Poor Cy Tolliver.
He's going to take the burden on of his guilt, you know, because it's the only way to keep his business going.
So unceremonious and unimportant somehow, the way the coffin's nailed and the lid's put on and... Just a few people are there doing it.
Yeah. It's beautiful, though.
This is one, you know, a real Old West historical moment, and nobody's bag. There to see it.
I won't trouble nothing. Hi, Doc.
What is it?
This is one of those great David Milch things. He came in there and just sort of made up this whole thing about how I don't want her to see anything in my room, and I can't let you see the potatoes, and I can't let you see that either. And so this whole time I'm trying to block her from getting in.
Oh, I see. I know what that behavior's coming from. I can tell you, what are you doing here?
And then finally I just give up.
Have you taken him back up again?
It's a rich woman wants to stop.
For me, fascination with medicine is not my thing. I like to read about physics, for instance. And if I can get involved in reading about physics and have some kind of idea in my head about physics, that's actually what feeds the scene. And it's really not that much to do with medicine. I actually, in real life, I find medicine kind of yucky. This is fun. I love the apothecary.
Mixing the things.
Yeah, it's like a little alchemist. You know, this is one of the things about this character that I wish we could spend. I mean, it really has to be about human beings, but he's a scientist. He's interested in how things work.
Jerry's coming back.
Yeah.
Hurry up.
Maybe one of the things that is most striking to me about David is his kindness. I have felt that from him at really critical times when, you know, either the work's been difficult or maybe I just made a misstep of some sort or whatever. And I've just felt an abundance of forgiveness and love and all of that coming from him. And that is so important to the entire mechanism of something like this working. Is just, it sort of comes from the top down, you know. Everybody feels a sense of his generosity. And then we all want to be that way towards each other. It spreads out from him. That I really appreciate. And now they think he's the sexiest thing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing sexier than getting away with murder. Even if you look like that.
There you go.
Mr. Hickok will lie beside two brothers.
This is wonderful.
And again, I'm remembering the weather out there.
And on the battlefield,
it felt like
born,
a funeral.
I saw more blood than
I was
this.
Watching from the hill, you and know, the characters watching the from the hill.
But
there
now.
Is something
but know now
so real in thinking
that.
About
not
a spirit going to a better place. I don't believe. Know. I don't know. In my imagination.
St. Paul tells us.
Because it was so beautiful.
By one spirit,
and
are we
clean.
All baptized into one body? Whether we be Jew or Gentile, bond or free. And have all been made to drink into one spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. He tells us, the eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee. Nor again, the head to the feet, I have no need of thee.
And this is so important what he's saying right now.
Which seem to be more feeble. And those members of the body which we think of as less honorable, all are necessary. He says that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one to another.
I just feel like this is what David's writing, is what he's talking about in this sermon.
Now, this is amazing. Watch. Bullock looks like he's speaking straight into his heart. You know, like he understands exactly what the minute and is being moved by what the preacher is saying.
And maybe does not want to be. He's an atheist, I think, Bullock.
Moving in others to allow them to see it.
But he knows he's being called to do something.
It's affecting him.
Yeah.
Let us sing how firm a foundation has been.
But as we see later on, he rejects the whole thing. He thinks it's he makes a big point of it being stupid.
He fights it, and then in some ways he gives into it.
And through fire.
This use of the sneeze.
Oh God,
it's
know.
So good.
And that was, you know, it was brilliantly executed by Jeffrey, and it was an idea of David's that just seemed so. That is so right, so human. What we come up against in those situations.
That turned him loose.
And I go to.
I myself remember I was still so sad about Keith.
Yeah.
Being gone, you know? And it was just no effort at all to be so moved by this whole thing because it was. In my mind, it was somehow it was Keith.
Because his body was there, he was in the episode.
Yeah.
That's beautiful work. Look at that. She's such a veiled character.
Yeah.
Can we get started?
He's pretty near done.
Oh, you can tell.
He's so mad because he's.
They let the son of a bitch go.
Yeah, I guess I can't.
He's got to do something. He has got to. In his nature, he's got to do something, and he doesn't want to.
You've been so kind to me, a stranger. If any of us have asked, being broken, how are we to live? Well, you took me into the body of the.
This is again a new beginning.
I'm from Etobicoke, Ontario. I'm from Vienna.
And he is, the minister is so elated. Elated.
What you feel now may be your part.
I remember
I know what you're talking about.
Finding myself feeling that way once after a great teacher of mine died, and I couldn't explain it. I couldn't explain it. That I was so, I was in that same excited state, you know?
Wow.
And I think sometimes when a great person dies, you can feel it, that something's been moved in the universe, you know? You can feel something's happened.
Keep
This is an amazing scene coming up here.
Yes. Jeffrey Jones.
There you go, that's me.
I tried to get my mind around who Jane might have been through reading a lot of things, and then I learned from David Milch that about 90% of what you read is lies, and so I had to let a lot of that go. And then I just was curious, and I ended up having a sort of conversation with Jane Alexander, who had played Calamity Jane in a made-for-TV movie, I don't remember when, but a bunch of years ago, long enough ago, that some creaky old guy was alive who had been alive back then and had a couple stories to tell. And Jane is the sort of actress who does do exhaustive research, and so she had very strong feelings about what was true and what wasn't, and some of them differed from David, and some of them were the same. Of course, in the end, I have to go with what David believed to have been true.
Jack McCall runs from no man.
Remember this when you run your own place. That type of guy hanging around gets people agitated. Forces them to take a position, one side or the other. An agitation.
You know, David is a teacher, and Swearingen is a teacher. He's constantly teaching people this and that. He's a bit of a professor.
He does have some of that, it's true. I hadn't thought of that before. He even teaches Bullock in some ways, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Teaches him his calling.
You nailed this scene.
It's me, mister! Back with water!
There's a line, well, it's coming up right now, actually.
That's great.
Are you dead?
And that's the line, and I'll tell you what, there are some folks that find that really funny. And I didn't think
well, there's
it was
a folk sitting on off to your right that found that really funny.
It had never occurred to me that it was all that funny. And at some radio station, they wanted me to say it and say it like the character. And oh my gosh, it's terrible how they want to make a clown out of you. Creek.
Unless they're keeping more than one body cool for shipping back east. Tethered, wrapped up, and floating like a lure for some huge fucking fish. The widow's got the little one now.
During this time, during this period, there was a lot of alcoholism and a lot of drug addiction. Alcoholism really had a reason because of, you know, water was really bad and alcohol would help kill a lot of the stuff. It just made people were healthier when they were drunk in those days, just because the water was so bad.
And I went to where they were singing, and I saw them as they laid my poor fucking bill.
This is such a great piece of acting.
Well.
Now there's a bird I ain't never seen before.
I'll tell you, this part at the end here, yeah.
Shall I talk about it to you?
That was a little piece of David.
Genius.
She's just got to pull herself right out and up for him, you know, she's got to do it. And that's how he saves her life. Because she can't stay down there when she's working with a sick man, you know?
Now, this is the beginning of something. Remember, it was always going to be, you know, the end of The Preacher for the whole season was going to take place this episode. And then it was the next episode. This poor guy was kept alive. Thank God.
Yeah. That really is a seizure to me. That mm-hmm. That does not look like a guy acting having a seizure.
Lunatic. High water, he never made much sense, but now he just utters pure gibberish.
Did he look pale to you?
What?
Did he seem pale?
How the fuck do I know if he was pale or not?
He looked pale to me.
What if he was?
Yeah, we're setting up the end of him now.
What is my part and your part? What part of my part is your part?
See, this is where I was talking about before. This is where he rejects the whole thing.
I don't know.
It doesn't have anything to do with it.
If he was pale or not,
what you're supposed to do.
I'm not supposed to do anything. Let's agree to that. Not one fucking thing that I don't decide I'm gonna. All right, Saul?
And I'll tell you what, Saul Starr, she is so steady.
Mm-hmm.
I just love John Hawks.
God damn it!
I was doing an operation with him the other day.
My part's getting hanged for it. Good luck with the fucking story.
And he was so great. I mean,
he's
totally
just true,
made it,
you know?
Yeah.
He's true.
Got after that widow. All right, Seth.
He's really looking at you. He's really there.
Cocksucker's head start. Be ready for you when you ride out. Thanks, Saul.
Oh, Joni washes the whores. I remember Ed Bianchi was terrified of this scene because it came in and there was not a line written of it, and all he knew was that Joni was going to be washing some naked girls. And I remember he was just terrified of directing it.
Get the praying out of your system.
That's amazing with a girl in the mirror.
Mm-hmm. Last montage, you see this, you see the women tending to the child, and you see Bullock galloping off to bring justice to McCall. And it sums it up so beautifully.
The widow healing, starting to move toward healing.
That's right, that's right. That's what it is. It's her feeding her the treatment. And that's what it is. It's this groundswell of goodness coming out of all these individuals in the wake of this huge injustice. And nobody knows, in each of these actions, nobody knows that they're part of something that's happening in the community.
Well, this has been really fun, and I want to thank everybody for listening. It's a real treat for me to be able to do it with you, Robin.
Oh, and with you as well, Brad. I've enjoyed this. I'm glad that so many people have taken an interest in the show and are watching it.
Oh, me too. Everybody, every time somebody comes up to me and says, I love the show, I go, yes!
I know. Isn't it exciting that people are actually watching and enjoying themselves? It's amazing. I mean, you know, you build something and you're building it in a vacuum. You know, you don't know what the world's going to say to it. And then to put it out there and have there be a good response feels so good.
The best. It's the best.
Yeah. And to love all